KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
Thank you to Coquitat, Bayside Garden Supply, Singing Tree Garden and Nursery, and The Garden Gate. And Jessica Hall, why don't you set up who our guest is?
All right. Well, I'm going to start by reminding our listeners that last week we had this hope that we would have a federal employee on the air, which we could not do because of the government shutdown. And we needed this person to come on the air to talk to us about the BLM's plans for limiting access on the King Range.
And now?
And now, since they're still out of work, we're bringing in somebody with a different perspective on the issue, and that is Wes Smith, who's with Humboldt Surfrider.
Hey, Wes Smith, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, welcome to Coastal Currents. I guess a good starting point would be we will probably not be talking about why Surfrider has an interest in this.
I think we should start with why. Not everybody's a surfer.
Wes, how do you want to handle this?
Well, maybe we should talk about what the actual proposal is of BLM.
There's a good starting point. What is the actual proposal of BLM, Wes?
Okay, and forgive me, all BLM employees, if I do not accurately represent this the best of my ability. I did a crash course. But there are three main actions proposed in the BLM plan. First, they want to implement an individual special recreation permit requirement for overnight use. And then they want to have a $5 per person per day / overnight fee associated with that. And then they propose to increase the camping fees at the main campgrounds from 8 to 15. So like Tobin and Waikiki and the other campgrounds that are along the roadway, basically. And what's of most interest to, I think, most of us is that the special recreation permit fee has several sub-actions. So besides the fee, you have to obtain, obviously, a permit. You can do that. They have an online system they're going to set up, or you can do it in one of the two offices, the one down at Whitethorn or the one in Arcata. And then they have daily limits, group size limits, and annual use limits. And the daily limits are broken up as 60 persons per day in the summer season, the high season, from May 15th to September 15th. And then they have 30 persons in the off season, which is obviously September 16th to May 14th. And then, but the annual use limits are really important. I mean, they have a 14-day cumulative overnight use requirement for the entire Arcata field office area, which includes, you know, Lost Coast, King Range, and a bunch of other lands. And
can, so, can you explain what that means?
It basically means my interpretation of this and reading it, it's pretty clear, and their writing's good, that if I stay, say, 4 or 5 nights up at Tobin Campground and go mountain biking, that's my first 4 days, and then I spend a week hunting, that's 7 more days, and then say I do the Lost Coast a couple times, that's, I can hit my 14-day limit pretty quickly. So it's not for day use, but it's overnight use, and it's cumulative.
So is it kind of like you have to get a permit and you get 14 little things that get punched out of your card or something?
That's the idea, yeah. Okay. I'm not sure exactly how they're going to implement it, but yes.
Okay, so
if you wanted to spend 3 weeks on the Lost Coast, just camped out or whatever, that is not a possible option.
Yeah, unless you don't participate in the, you know, in the permit system.
Okay.
And that's the point. But I think the other thing to highlight is that they use an on-season and an off-season, and they have some visitor use studies, which were done by HSU in 97 and 2003, which, and then they have, they've been keeping track over time. You know, people come in for bear boxes, and they have, you're basically supposed to check in when you go into the wilderness anyway now. So they have some statistics and numbers, but most of it, the information is for the on-season. And it seems kind of odd that they'd want to limit. I mean, they have limits for just people per day that can start into the area in the winter is 30. And in the summer, it's 60. That doesn't really make maybe all that much sense, you know, given that there's already less people in the winter as it is. And then they also have in the wilderness plan, which is an approved plan for the King Range area, which was done about a year ago, finalized. You can read that online too. But in there, they have objectives for the number of people in certain areas. For, say, like along different sections of the Lost Coast, they have on-season and off-season targets. And the off-season ones are lower, generally about a half to two-thirds of the on-season. And for surfers, hunters, mountain bikers that are in the local area of Mendocino-Humboldt, I mean, that's most of the time when I think most of us use it. So it seems odd that the numbers are that low, but for the off-season.
Okay. We've got Wes Smith. He's on from Surfrider. It's Coastal Currents, if you're just tuning in. That was a lot of information, and I'm trying to keep it all straight. But can we go into real talk mode for a minute here?
Certainly.
How does this really make you feel? Like, what do you think that the BLM is using bad data in terms of restricting the number of people who can go into the King Range in the Lost Coast?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think they have information. They have pretty good data, and then they have the visitor use surveys, which are only for the summertime. And those asked a lot of questions about, you know, what people thought, how, if they were able to achieve the wilderness characteristics and qualities of solitude, untrampled areas, were they able to, you know, have unconfined recreation. So there's a series of things that the BLM manages for under the Wilderness Act. And those visitor surveys were asking, well, are you visitors able to achieve those? And there was a variety of mixed results, and that we could go into that for a long time, but maybe we'll breeze over that part. But I think they have okay data. It's just they don't have any real data besides just some use numbers in the off season, and they're really low.
Okay, so you're saying that, I mean, if I'm hearing you right, Wes, that there are, I mean, I think everybody in this discussion wants to see the ecology of the Lost Coast protected and its sort of wild ways preserved. Like, that's why we want to go there, is because you can go there and not have any cell coverage. Like, you can go there and do amazing things and see awesome flora and fauna. You're saying that maybe since these numbers are relatively low, like, locals won't be able to get into the Lost Coast because, like, Bay Area people will take up all the available spots? Is that what I hear you saying?
Not necessarily, but what I'm saying is I believe most of the people that I've talked to, especially surfers, haven't participated as well in the numbers as signing in, because we might go in the middle of the night. And so it may not be as reflective of local use patterns, you know, like when we go up and stay at, you know, we mountain bike and stay overnight up there, and then, you know, we spend some time hunting and, you know, surfing. And so what I'm saying is that I think local usage in the winter is sporadic, and it comes in patterns, because surf, you know, it doesn't happen every day. It happens only on a few good days a month, maybe, in that area. And mountain biking, you know, we'll go on beautiful days like this, but you're really looking for a good three-day weekend where you can spend time where it's nice. So it's kind of targeted use. And most of the people that I've talked to lately spend 20, 30 days in there, you know, and overnight over the winter. So I think the numbers are a little off.
So, Russ, does that 14-day sort of limit, is that annual or is that per season?
It's annual.
Okay.
Jessica Hall, what's your read on all this? Because you've barely been there.
I've barely been there. So it's hard for me to even begin to process this. I mean, I'm from a really densely populated place where our natural wildlands are typically overrun and overwhelmed. So, like,
with humans?
Yes.
Yeah.
It, you know, there's graffiti on boulders. I mean, literally, there is. There's gang graffiti on boulders on the San Gabriel River. So it's hard for me to put myself into this situation where I haven't even hiked this area to understand what's being looked at. I guess what I'm interested in knowing, though, is the BLM in their report describing any existing levels of impacts to the wildlands as a result of the current levels of use? Is there anything to that effect, sort of justifying the limits?
Yes, I mean, there is. In their wilderness plan and in the business plan, and the business plan is the only thing you can comment on right now, and you got to comment by Friday unless they change that because of the shutdown. They go through and they do a pretty good analysis of the resources and how things, are relative to the wilderness characteristics. But I think that they're not quite maybe on with the off-season, lower allocations and the total annual limit on people, for overnight.
So there are certain events or times a year when there might be tremendous use, like around holidays or something like that, and then the rest of the year it's relatively sporadic, you think?
Yes, and they have one graph that, they don't provide all the years of data that they have is in the graphs, but they have one year where they show the visitor load over the year, and you can see, Memorial Day weekend and spring break have huge spikes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they present pretty good arguments all for their actions, except for kind of the off-season actions,
right,
which are lower numbers. So
let me ask you this, Wes. I mean, this is my ignorance speaking here, but if they've put a limit of 30 starts a day, and you're saying that it's already pretty low, the usership of it, are we really in conflict there?
If they want better participation in their permit program, they might be. Because, I mean, when you look at, the first day of hunting season, or you look at, one good day of, there's going to be three or four days of good surf. There could be a lot more people than those numbers.
I see.
And so, or when we have a mountain bike race up there, which generally they'll have a special use for that.
What would you recommend as a way of addressing that while maintaining the lower numbers?
Well, I think they do a really good job talking about, the other potential ways to do that too, which is education. Bringing in the wilderness ethics and leave no trace. I mean, they discuss that a lot, and they provide means and ways to do that. Like, they propose to do to increase law enforcement presence on the Lost Coast during the first day of hunting season and Memorial Day. And then they also hope to bring in, I'm not sure what they call them, but educational interns or whatever they might be, to be on the coast to, help people understand that, you want to leave your camp. You don't want to build a fire with rocks, so you scour and burn the rocks, and then the next visitor comes in and sees that. You dig a pit in the sand, and then it's gone. So they want to use education on the heavy side, which is a great thing. And then they're trying to look at, well, we're going to have to probably limit numbers, as they do on, say, the Rogue River or the Grand Canyon or anywhere else that sees a high amount of use during particular parts of the year. But it's just that they don't have good data or visitor surveys, which ask the questions, are you finding solitude in those things? They don't have that for the winter. So they don't really have a really good rationale necessarily to base the lower numbers in the winter.
Well, we're running a little low on time. I don't know, Jess, if you've got some more questions. I have just a couple. Again, it's Wes Smith from Surf Rider. The first question is a big, dumb question, which is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Was it even broke? Like, it doesn't seem like the Lost Coast, like whatever impacts were happening on the Lost Coast, like, I certainly haven't seen them when I was down there.
Well, I mean, they have a variable amount of usage, but the usage appears to be increasing, and it's somewhere from 10 to 20,000, visitor days, which is a person per day, on the Lost Coast over the last few years. And those surveys only sampled, around 300 people, on the off season. And based on that information, there is, You have to look at the percentages and everything, but there are a percentage of people that said that they weren't necessarily able to achieve certain wilderness qualities, the solitude and so forth, and that litter was a high problem, although that's dropped because the BLM has made great effort to go clean it up. So there is some information and some basis for that, but it's not, you know, statistically significant as far as I'm concerned, you know, based on the low sample relative to the number of people that are in there.
Right. See, Mike, this is where if we had someone from the BLM who is not unemployed right now to talk to us about this, we could actually find out what, because the land managers themselves, you know, they see things that we as visitors wouldn't see because they're there all the time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that would be a valuable perspective that we are clearly lacking here.
Yeah.
And you may get, you know, some emails from people who are off work right now. So.
Yeah.
Some anonymous communications.
Yes.
Well, we're all in favor of protecting and restoring our coastline. That's what Coastal Currents is about. Like, we want to see that. We also know that by using it and respecting the land, that is how you create people who advocate for it.
Right.
So it doesn't sound like the balance is being struck quite properly. Wes, before we let you go, is there anything that you, like, if you could make everybody listening do one thing to help fix this problem, what would that one thing be?
It would be to go online, and you'll have to do a little searching through Google to go look at the business plan and read the pages, it's like 13 to 17, and send in a comment. I mean, BLM is really good at addressing comments. And there was an article in the Times Standard where they said that, you know, there's been almost no local comments. And if you contribute one comment and you're saying, well, I don't like the 14-day use because, and you give a specific reason and you provide a solution, they will listen and address it. The Wilderness Plan only had like 13 or 14 comments, and they address them all. Don't be emotional about your comment, but be specific. You know, if you're interested in the 14-day consecutive limit, or if you're interested in, well, I don't think the off-season numbers are correct, you know, put in a comment. They'll really listen.
And, Wes, you said that the comments are due Friday under the current deadline, and we don't know if it will be extended because no one's there.
But I'm unemployed right now because I work for the National Marine Fisheries Service as a contractor. But anyway, get to the point is, federal agencies, they all listen. If you send in comments past their deadline a day or two, they listen to it, especially if it's worthy. Okay.
A reasonably well-constructed comment is going to go a lot further than, you suck!
Very much so.
All right. Wes Smith with Surf Rider, thank you so much. It sounds like a complicated issue, and thanks for trying to break it down for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Wes.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
It is 12:21. That's a lot to think about.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, I hope that there are more people in the region who have enjoyed the King Range than I, because I clearly haven't been out there yet.
Get out
to
it.
Really explore it.
It's nuts.
And
it's so cool.
People, you know, this is your government at work for you. They're trying to manage the resource, and they need your input.
All right. We got to take a break. It's KHUM, Radio Without the Rules.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out khum.com or search KHUM in iTunes.